Hey, everybody, I'm John Shires, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
All right, well, it's an honor to be able to introduce the speaker tonight. I really just came to make sure he wore a tie, because in our line of sponsorship, you wear a tie and a coat when you talk, so well done. He didn't know I was coming to do that, so that was good. No, it's really an honor to be able to introduce whoever you are. I know him really well, and he's a grand sponsor of mine, and he joined our home group a while back, and he's really enthusiastic about recovery. He's really enthusiastic about everything he does. He's very goofy, which I personally is close to my heart for that reason. And so, you know, please help us. Let's welcome Marcus.
All right. My name is Marcus Palmiere. I'm an alcoholic.
Marcus.
I'm grateful to be here, and I'm grateful to be sober tonight. My sobriety date is July 6th of 2012. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I sponsor other men. I'm always available to sponsor other men. And my home group is the Fifth Tradition group, and it's the best group in the world. So, so I'm going to talk about, you know, in a general way, what it used to, you know, what it was like, what happened, what it's like today. The other part of our book that talks about, you know, when we share our stories, you know, it talks about how, you know, we share about how we found, you know, came into contact with a power greater than ourselves, you know, and that has the power that has relieved my alcoholism. So we're going to get to talk about God, too, because that's all that there is to talk about. You know, I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was not the case when I first got here. Not the case at all. And I had I had some real strong feelings about Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time until I truly gave myself to this program and saw what it could do for me in my life. So, kind of how it all got going. I'm originally from Colorado. I was born and raised in Denver. I, you know, grew up in a great home. There's no, you know, I have no. Nothing that happened in my family or no, like, fact or circumstance of my childhood that I can point to and say, you know, yes, that's why I'm an alcoholic. I have three other siblings, none of which are alcoholic. My parents are not alcoholic. I mean, I had pretty much every opportunity afforded to me as a kid and growing up. And, you know, I had a very, very different experience from my siblings growing up. And, a speaker that I like, you know, talks about there's two versions of our past. There's, you know, what happened, and then there's what I think happened. And that's absolutely my case. Like, I have a completely different childhood today than I did when I grew up. And it's just all a matter of perspective. Because, you know, if you asked me then, you know, what was really going on in my house was that, you know, my parents loved, you know, my siblings more than me. You know, and that I was just ostracized and that, you know, I was different and I was never accepted and, you know, I was just never deserving of their love like, you know, like the other kids in my family were. That was absolutely not what happened at all. And I had no reason to believe that. You know, I mean, I can remember, you know, situations where, you know, my parents would tell me, you know, like, you know, we love you all, you know, equally. But I never believed it because I never felt it. And for me, I can only believe what I feel, you know. Everything, my perspective on the world, and what's been so great about the process of Alcoholics Anonymous and going through the program is looking at these old ideas. You know, one of my old ideas is my perspective on the world and everything in it relates and revolves around how I feel about things, you know, not what's actually going on. And that was something that I didn't know then. I didn't consciously know that I was doing this then, and I know that a little bit better today. So I had my first, you know, mind-altering substance. There was no substances involved, but I threw a rock at a cop car, and I had an experience. And, you know, I felt this rush of adrenaline, and he got out of the car, and he chased us, and we ran, and we got away. And I was like, that, I want to be doing this. Like, this is awesome. It was about doing something wrong, you know, doing something that I knew that I wasn't supposed to be doing. I just love that feeling, and I love the feeling of, like, the adrenaline that went along with it. You know, I was, you know, people talk about how, you know, as a kid they always grew up and they felt separate, different, and alone. They were on the outside looking in. You know, I had that experience kind of like what I was just talking about. But, like, there was other times, I always tell this because this is just, like, the perfect example of it. Like, I'd be out to dinner, I'd be out to dinner with my family. It just as like a little kid. And I would get up and I would just walk on over to another table where another family was eating dinner. And I'd just sit down with them and I'd just start eating dinner with them, you know, and talking to them. And, you know, like I was a really outgoing, gregarious little kid. And, you know, like I was like a childhood actor, like I did, you know, like commercials and stuff. So like I was really like a gregarious little kid at times. But then at other times, you know, another one of my earliest memories was I was, you know, sitting, you know, all by myself alone on the playground, you know, and this, I'm like a 5-year-old kid. And at this time, I think that the world doesn't understand me. Like that's a crazy, like that's a crazy thought for like a little 5-year-old kid to have, you know, like it just, like it makes absolutely no sense. It's not rooted in any fact, but the way that my outlook on life, you know, something happens, whatever it is, I make a judgment in the moment of what that is. I do not consult with anybody else about what's happening. And then I make up my mind about what that means as it relates to me. Because at my core, my problem is selfishness and self-centeredness. And then I make this decision on what this means. And then I just go on and carry on with the rest of my life. And then this instance, you know, from when I was a 5-year-old kid is now dictating my behavior 15 years later. And I am not conscious of this in the least bit. I have absolutely no idea that this is going on, but it's happening. Again, and that's been the beautiful part of this, and I'll talk about it, like in getting into inventory and seeing these old ideas for what they are as face value, not something that I was capable of doing in the moment. So, you know, it seemed like everybody else growing up, you know, they all had it figured out. They all somehow knew intuitively what they needed to do. You know, like all my siblings, you know, they were like they got very good grades and they always like, you know, knew the right things to say and say and do and like how they acted and how they behaved. They just seemed like they had it all figured out. And me, it's like I was always pushing the boundaries. I was always, you know, trying to get a rise out of people. I was always trying to see, you know, just how I can, you know, just get an angle a little bit, you know, get a reaction from somebody. I love doing that because it made me feel, you know, that validation. It made me feel, you know, that I was important. So that, you know, that's what my childhood looked like. When I found alcohol, and I don't have that single... you know, like I don't have that memory of like my first drink and it was some amazing experience and it was, you know, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. Like I don't remember when my first drink was. I can't, you know, point to that one moment and say, you know, this is what it was and this was my, you know, response. This was my experience as a result of it. But gradually, you know, like I just started drinking and it was very, very innocent. It was very, you know, casual. There was definitely some of the motivation behind it. There was that degree of, you know, this is something wrong. You know, something I know I'm not supposed to be doing it and doing. So I like that. But I started drinking and there was no consequences. You know, I mean, nobody was dying or getting arrested or, you know, nothing really bad was happening. Now, this is a disease of the progressive nature, but when I first started drinking, you know, it was very innocent, and it was that social drinking. It was that conviviality with friends that our literature talks about. I don't think that, you know, I was alcoholic from the first drink that I took. Our literature talks about, you know, that there's an invisible line, and at that point, once we cross it, there's no going back, and that was more of my experience. You know, it was something that kind of built gradually. But what ended up happening, I noticed pretty early on that I was the way that I drank was different from the way that other people were drinking. But I didn't, you know what alcoholism was at the time. All I knew was that, you know, I liked to get more messed up than other people did. And I thought that was just a matter of preference. You know, this is just how I prefer to do things. You know, I just prefer to get more messed up. I had no idea that, you know, what was actually happening was, you know, a physical allergy. So gradually things, you know, start to begin to develop and, What I quickly, you know, began to find out is that as I was drinking more than everybody else was, I would start doing these really embarrassing things. You know, and I would be, you know, I had a mouth, so I'd be, you know, like getting in, I'd be, you know, getting in fights, you know, running my mouth, or, you know, I'd be, you know, naked running through, like, the streets, and just my drinking was very, very different from everybody else's drinking. And so as a result, you know, I kind of... I couldn't hang out with the same people all the time because they didn't really want to be around me when I was drinking. So I began this, you know, kind of like this social chameleon where I would just kind of like float around to different friend groups. And, you know, I would, once I, you know, overstayed my welcome, then I would just kind of like move along to the next one. And like I did this and I went to like a really, you know, I went to like a large high school. We had like 1,000 people in my graduating class. So like I had plenty of opportunities, plenty of different groups that I could just, you know, kind of work around in. So that wasn't, you know, really an issue. But then I kind of came to the realization that, you know, well, I can just kind of take the whole, you know, variable out of this whole thing. My issue is not that, it's not the drinking. It's the fact that I'm drinking with these people. So I'll just start drinking by myself. And at age 16, this is when I began to drink alcoholically. And what my daily life looked like when I'm, you know, 16 years old is, you know, I would get home from school, I'd get home from practice, I would, you know, I'd get home, I'd get all my homework done, and then I would just get as, you know, drunk, as blackout drunk as quickly as I possibly could so that I could fall asleep. And then I'd just wake up the next day and do it all over again. But then the amount that I was drinking, it wasn't doing what it was supposed to do. So then I had to start drinking more. And then in the mornings, I'd be waking up and, you know, I'd be like really hungover. And then I'd have to drink in the morning. So I'm a 16-year-old kid driving my little sister to school in the mornings, waiting for her to get out of the car so that I can drink, so I can go into class and then continue the rest of my day. And at this time in my life, like, you know, I'm playing 3 varsity sports. I'm taking, like, all AP classes. Like, everything on the outside of my life, like, looks really good. And I'm managing all those other things really well, so I think. But on the inside, I mean, like, I am just so tortured by all this insanity that's going on in my mind. Like, my mind is just constantly racing, and I can't turn it off. And the only thing that seems to work for me is drinking. And that's the only thing that was ever able to shut off the insanity that was constantly going on in my mind. The voice in my head saying that, you know, I was never loved like, you know, my siblings was. And I didn't, you know, belong to my family like everybody else did. And that, you know, I was the mess up child and that I was, you know, like the black sheep. Those are the things that I was just constantly thinking about. And the only way that I could shut those off was with alcohol. So alcohol absolutely served a purpose. Because alcohol did exactly what I wanted it to do. And from the... when I started drinking this way, up until my very last drink, alcohol never stopped working for me. It always did and always had the exact effect that I wanted it to have. But what happened at the end is that the price that I was paying for what I was getting became way too much, and I wasn't willing to pay that price anymore. So my drinking began to progress, and I ended up going to college. I didn't last there very long, but I went to college for a little bit. And when I got to college, that was, you know, and Bill talks about, you know, his moment where, you know, I have arrived. And that was my moment in college. Because, you know, as I was getting in more trouble, my parents began, you know, to be more strict. And I'd, you know, have a lot more hoops to jump through. And just the facts and the circumstances of my situation, like I did have to, you know, moderate my drinking. I did have to... you know, control it to the best of my ability. When I got to college, there was no more need for that. You know, there was no supervision. The governor just came off and I could just let it rip. And not like a month into college, I was hospitalized in an alcohol-induced a coma for alcohol poisoning. And that was my first moment when it was like, well, not for me. For everybody else, it was like... for everybody else, it was like, Marcus has a serious problem with drinking. For me, it was like, yeah, that was a wild night. but I just had, like, it meant absolutely nothing. Like, when I was out for a couple of days, when I came to, the, you know, nurse was like, do you realize, you know, like what happened to you? Like, do you know what your blood alcohol content was? And she told me, and I was just like, God, I'm death proof. Like that, like that was, you know, that was my response. Just because I had absolutely no idea. But that was my response. My parents thought differently. So they, you know, went on the internet and they found out that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is typically the, you know, when someone has a problem with the drinking, then they do the Alcoholics Anonymous. So they're like, you're going to do the Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do the Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I went to, you know, my first AA class. And I remember leaving, and I'm riding my bike, and I'm on the phone with my mom, and I'm like, "Mom, it was the greatest thing ever! Like all of these people, like they sound like they talk exactly like me, you know, and they sound like they did all the crazy things that I do." And that really was my experience. You know, I didn't know that. All of those reasons that I felt different when I saw all my other friends and I knew that like that my drinking was different from everybody else's, I didn't know what that was. But when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time, I found other people. And I could relate with how you guys drank. I could relate to the insane stuff that you guys did while drinking. And I could relate to the crazy thoughts that you had. And I, you know, I felt connected to something. You know, I was sober for a couple of months, and I say sober. I wasn't really sober. I was a little bit sober for a couple of months. But it came time, you know, to do the work of this program. It came time to write inventory. It came time to do the actual work outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wasn't willing to do that. I had not been beaten into a state of reasonableness. I had not been beaten down enough by alcohol at this point in my life to understand what it truly meant to be an alcoholic. I had no conception of what it meant to be powerless over alcohol. Even though I could rattle off, you know, this disease is the physical allergy coupled with the mental obsession, I could rattle that off to you and I could explain what alcoholism is, but I had no idea what it meant inside. And as a result, when it came time to do the work, when it came time to do the uncomfortable stuff, you know, the self-will destroying, ego destroying aspects of this program, I was unwilling. And I made up my mind that I wasn't an alcoholic, you know, that I wasn't like you guys. I wasn't going to drink, but I just didn't need to go to the A&A classes anymore. And so I stopped. And about 2 weeks later, I was like, you know, I really was making too big of a deal of this. You know, I think that I can drink. I just have to be really careful about how I do it. And my college roommate at the time, who's still like one of my closest friends today, who just saw me in like the absolute worst shape in this part of my life. But, you know, he agreed with me, you know, that, you know, I wasn't an alcoholic. He knew nothing about alcoholism. He's not an alcoholic. But I took that and I ran with it. And so we were going to run an experiment, and he was gonna control and kind of like dictate the amount of alcohol that I consumed. And it went great the first time. You know, I mean, we just drank a little bit. You know, I didn't get too messed up. We had a great time. We were just sitting in the room playing video games, just hanging out. Had a blast, right? A week later, I tried again. It goes well again. I think I'm onto something. You know what? I really was making too big deal of this whole, you know, being an alcoholic thing. So I tried again the third time. And typical Marcus Knight, I, you know, drink a whole bottle in like, 15 minutes. I'm arrested, you know, pee my pants in the back of a cop car, go to detox, too drunk to detox, go to the hospital, back to detox, wake up the next morning, have absolutely no idea what happened. And, you know, at this time, like, I'm on a full-ride scholarship at school that I'm about to lose as the result of drinking because this is, you know, an additional infraction. This is what makes me alcoholic. You know, our literature talks about that the difference between, you know, the heavy drinker and the alcoholic, that given sufficient reason to stop and moderate, the heavy drinker, you know, is just going to put it down and he's going to go on his business. I had every reason to not drink, and I drank. And I had every reason to try and control and moderate my drinking, especially because it went so well and I had such a good time those two times before. But I also have this physical allergy. So even that when my best intentions, you know, even when I have my best intentions, when I'm met with alcohol, as soon as I put alcohol into my body, it just sets something off. And I don't know what's going to happen. And one of the hardest things that I had to come to grips with when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous was those couple of times that I did drink casually, that I did drink socially, you know, that my drinking didn't look like, you know, what it looked like some of those other times. That must make me not alcoholic. And I used those experiences to isolate myself from you all and from Alcoholics Anonymous. And the way that it was explained to me is that I cannot drink alcohol safely. And safely means with a predictable outcome. Because sometimes, yes, it is just those couple of drinks. But that is not the rule. And what usually happens is, you know, the other end of that. Shortly after that, you know, I know something's, you know, going on, but I'm just, now I'm in trouble with the law, so I have to not drink and go through like sobriety monitoring, for alcohol. So thank God for drugs, because they don't check for that when they only know that you're an alcoholic. And that's, you know, I identify as an alcoholic because, you know, through and through to my core, like, that is absolutely, like, that is the thing that brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the thing that was absolutely always there. And whenever I could drink, I would. But I was on probation, and I had a lot of legal issues, and they always tested me for alcohol for a number of years. And so when I couldn't drink, from that respect, I used drugs. This kept going on for a little while. One story that I like to kind of tell, because this is the perfect example of, you know, the different types of alcoholics, or the different types of drinkers, I'm sorry. So me and two of my other buddies, we decided we're going to hang out, you know, one night, we're going to cook steaks, you know, kick back, you know, drink some beers, you know, watch the game, something like that, right? And, you know, that's what they had in mind. I probably wasn't into it, like, any of that other than the drinking part. And, you know, the night starts off, you know, pretty casual and innocent. You know, we're, you know, just drinking beers, you know, eating steaks. And then, you know, out comes the bottle, you know, and we start hitting it pretty hard. And one of my other buddies, you know, who's the social drinker, you know, he sees that, you know, that things aren't really going in a great direction. He sees, you know, that this night isn't going anywhere good. And he bows out. He decides to go home. You know, he can take it or leave it alone. So now it's just me and my other buddy. And, you know, we're hitting it hard and we're drinking. And, you know, of course, you know, I was a traveling drunk. You know, I like to, like, I've woken up in other people's houses before that they had no idea that I was there. But I would just kind of, like, you know, very innocent, just, like, find my way into somebody's house and decide to sleep on their couch that night. And that made for a couple very awkward experiences in the morning. I'm a traveling drunk, and, you know, we're trying, I don't know what happened other than from what was in the police report, but, long story short, you know, we get arrested for, you know, a litany of insane stuff, and, so at this time, right, you know, like, I've been arrested while, you know, I'm still on probation, which is, they frown upon. You know, so now I've got, you know, like, more serious probation and, like, a pretrial supervision thing. So here's the difference between me and my other buddy, right? Because his and I's drinking looked like the exact same that night. The way that we were drinking looked the exact same. We both got, you know, very drunk. We were both doing all the same crazy, insane stuff. We both got arrested, you know, right? So our drinking looked the exact same. Now, he'd never been in trouble before, and when he realized, you know, what this meant, he made the decision that he was going to stop drinking. Apparently, you can do that. But that's what our book talks about, that given sufficient reason to stop or moderate, he can, and he did. But for me, that's not an option. So I keep getting loaded, and on, like, my court day got pushed out, and I had this wonderful attorney, bless her heart, who just, like, went to bat for me. And I was to have a favorable settlement of this whole thing, and I wasn't going to go to jail, and everything was going to be fine. And the night before I'm supposed to go, or the next day I'm supposed to go to my very last, you know, like, sentencing thing, and, but it's on my birthday, you know. And I've got buddies coming into town, and we're gonna, you know, cut up and have a good time. And I've been, you know, sober for a couple of months, and you know, it's time to blow off some steam. And so I just get absolutely obliterated that night, and I show up to court the next day, and I overslept through my alarm. I couldn't even take a shower. I'm, you know, all disheveled. I reek of alcohol, and I show up, and my attorney's like, "Have you been drinking?" And I was like, yeah? She's like, she's just so baffled by this. And I was like, it's my birthday. So I it's my birthday. I had friends over last night. And she's like, Marcus. She's like, all right, chew this gum. Don't say a word. And it ends up, you know, and it ends up being, settled fine. But she comes up to me afterwards, and she like, kind of like pulls me aside. And she had this conversation with me that it seems like all these other people keep having the same conversation with me. And it's, Marcus, what are you doing? Wait, why would you do that? You know? I remember a conversation with my mom. She goes, why do you have to destroy everything that you touch? Or a conversation with a therapist when he says, you know, I really feel sorry for you. You know? So it's like, why are these people in my life saying these things to me? But I never understood it. Because I can't see me with my delusion in this insane perception that I have. I can't see me the way that everybody else sees me. I can't see myself for face value. And if I admit that I have a problem with drinking, that means that I have to stop drinking. And drinking is the only thing in my life that makes me feel okay. And that's just not an option. So to me, like, that's the perfect, you know, example of, you know, like the different kinds of alcoholics. And this just started a pattern, you know, and I'm kicked out of school, and for the next 3 years, you know, things just continue to get worse, and it's just, you know, one instance and then another, and then, you know, I clean up my act for a little bit. You know, I might, you know, stop drinking for a little while when, like, my parents are feeding me Anabuse, or, you know, or I'm on, like, you know, still on probation or something like that. And, you know, this just continues and continues. And what ends up happening is, you know, my parents had just had enough, essentially. And, you know, they say, okay, well, you have to either go to treatment or you're out on your own. Well, I'm always an easier, softer way guy, and I, you know, grew up, you know, in this great, you know, lifestyle, so out on my own doesn't sound too appealing. So I was like, all right, well, let's try this treatment thing. And, you know, I show up, and I go to treatment. The one great thing, for me about treatment is treatment brought me Alcoholics Anonymous. And treatment brought me back that feeling that I had that very first night that I ever went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And that was the feeling of being a part of something. That was the feeling of being, you know, with people that understood me and not only how I drank, but how I felt and how I saw the world. That's what treatment gave me. But treatment also gave me my higher power, which was in the form of a tall blonde who is several years older than me. And she and I, we were going to make it, and we were going to do it together. So a couple weeks after treatment, you know, we're hanging out, and she says, I really want to drink. You know, do you want to drink? And I said, well, if you want to drink, I absolutely want to drink. And we drank. And it was just like that. But in that, like, split second when she asked me if I wanted to drink, keep in mind, I just had a 28-day crash course in the disease of alcoholism. So I'm, you know, pretty much a certified addictions counselor. They actually made me put on my toolbox. Treatment. They made me put on my toolbox that I was not a counselor on the toolbox and that I was not allowed to give any advice. But I've had this 28-day crash course, you know, in the disease of alcoholism. So I know things about, you know, about how this should work, right? So in that, like, split second when she said, do you want to drink? I was like, I should call my sponsor. This is not a good idea. I should call someone else in the program. No, I should just don't drink right now. You know, this kind of feeling that you have is going to pass. And then my next thought was, no, we're drinking. Because for me, I can have all this knowledge. I can have all this understanding of what it means to be an alcoholic. And that does nothing for me. Because when it comes time and I've got nothing in this moment that's keeping me from drinking, other than some power that I have absolutely no touch with at this point in my life, I'm always going to say, let's drink. And that is, you know, the baffling aspect of this disease. And our literature refers to it as this mental blank spot, that there's going to come a time, you know, when I can't bring into my consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even days, weeks, months ago, whatever it says. And I experience that in that moment. Because I had every single reason not to drink. Alcohol had done, at this point, had gotten me into all of this trouble. I had every reason not to drink. But when she said she wanted to drink and she asked me if I wanted to drink, my response was, of course, yes, let's drink. This started about a three-week bender where we were skipping around to, you know, different motels and dodging 12-step calls and welfare checks from the police and our parents and our families, you know, trying. You know, my family was driving around checking hotels, trying to find me, calling, you know, the hospital, calling the jails to see if I had turned up anywhere. One of the most heartbreaking things in amends to my little sister when she described what was going on and, you know, what it was like to go through this. And she described this as normal, that this was normal for them to be calling around and not knowing if I was alive or dead. That had become the normal. Because that's what this disease of alcoholism is. It is just it makes me just absolute selfish and self-centered to my core, and that I am a tornado, and that I do destroy everything that I touch. And that's what I do. That's not what this disease of alcoholism does. That's what I do when I'm drinking. That's what I do when I'm not in touch with some power greater than myself. That's what I do when I'm not on a spiritual path working a program. So this culminates in a very romantic suicide pact that we're this culminates in a very romantic suicide pact. You know, this world didn't understand us, and you know, we were gonna go on for, you know, greener pastures. It is so insane. It didn't work. I'm here. She's still alive. And, you know, we ended up in detox in the hospital. We tried to drink ourselves to death, which is usually not a good course of action. One of the experiences that I had, because I was in detox a couple days, I had to take a break with all of this, and the police thought the best place for me to take a break was in detox. And when I got out of that detox, I made up my mind that I wasn't going to drink again. And I felt that conviction through, like, every single bit of me. You know, I had one of these, like, you know, realization moments that this is, I can't keep doing this, you know. This is just crazy what I'm doing. I'm not going to drink again. And I swear I wasn't going to drink again. I really wasn't. But I actually believed it. And I hadn't ever, you know, like, really said it that way before. Because before it was never that I wasn't going to drink again. It's that I wasn't going to let that thing happen again. Or that I was going to drink, you know, a little bit smarter this time. But this time it was that I was never going to drink again. And it wasn't but hours later that I was in that motel with her and I was drinking again. And I was so baffled at this. I couldn't understand how this had happened, you know, the way that it happened. And that's this mental blank spot yet again. Because I'm an alcoholic. I am powerless over alcohol. And what that means is that I will always drink, no matter what. And that's something that I never understood when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the piece of the first step that I was missing. My thing was that I was going to beat the game. It wasn't that I was going to drink like other people. It's that I wasn't going to have all the consequences of the way that I was drinking. And I had this realization the moment that that was out, that that was no longer an option. And my realization was this, and that was that this is what the rest of my life was going to look like. I'd been beaten down. I surrendered in that moment. There was no more fighting it. There was no more, I'll figure out a way. In this moment, it was, this is what the rest of my life was going to look like. And I didn't want it to. So I went to another AA meeting. Of course, my parents sent my two little sisters with me to make sure I actually went into the meeting. But I shared in that meeting. And I shared what had happened the last, you know, couple weeks. And I shared that I needed help. And after that meeting, you know, I got swarmed by about like 8 guys that all came up to me. They handed me their business cards. You know, they gave me their phone numbers. You know, they started talking to me. And Patrick was, you know, one of those guys. You know, and one of these old timers came up to me and he said, you know, Marcus, one of two things is going to happen to you. You're either going to be sober for a really long time or you're going to be dead. And I knew that that was the truth in that moment. And it was I just heard, you know, it was one of those things that in those moments, you know, sometimes we just hear things and they click, and that just absolutely clicked with me. So I asked one of these men to be my sponsor. And he asked me, you know, what are you willing to do to stay sober? And I was like, well, anything. Of course, I had no idea what he meant at the time when I said anything. He said, all right, you're going to go to a meeting every day. You're going to show up to that meeting 15 minutes early and you're going to agree. You're going to call 3 alcoholics every day, and when you call, you're going to say, I'm calling to demonstrate my willingness to stay sober today. You're going to pray every morning for a clean and sober day, and at night you're going to thank God. And you're going to do these things every single day. And he goes, you know how probation works? I was like, yes. He goes, good. You're on probation. Do this every day for a week, and I'll sponsor you. And I wanted what this guy had. Because at every meeting, he was the guy that was standing at the door, and he was harassing people as they were coming in, and he was always smiling and giving people a hard time and always laughing and cutting up, and he was a big, goofy guy. And I love that. Because I looked at him, and I saw a guy who felt comfortable with who he was, and that was a feeling that I'd never felt in my life, and I wanted that in my life. So I started doing these things, and I started feeling a part of this meeting, and I started feeling a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started feeling a part of something in a way that I'd never felt a part of something ever in my life. And I learned about what it means to be an alcoholic when I would, you know, walk into the meeting, you know, 10 minutes late with my, you know, newcomer girlfriend, and, you know, we'd be laughing, and they'd be reading, you know, whatever the first part of the, you know, they'd be reading the preamble or whatever, and he would stop the meeting and he'd say, hey, the rest of us are having a meeting, and it started 10 minutes ago. And this is in like a meeting with like 80 people in the meeting. And I'm just absolutely terrified and I'm so embarrassed. But then after the meeting, you know, he came up to me and he says, you know, this is my church. This is my worship. You know, you don't disrespect that. This is as sacred as you make it. And that's something that always stuck with me, that this is as sacred as you make it. You know, when they'd be, we'd be sitting in the meeting and I'd, you know, take out my phone and check something. He'd snatch my phone out of my hand and he'd throw it on the ground next to him. And then I'd be like, you know, again, embarrassed because it's in front of everybody. But then after the meeting, you know, he'd come up to me and he'd say, you know, have you sat in a meeting and, you know, somebody said something and it just really clicked with you? I was like, well, yeah, I mean, that's happened multiple times. He's like, so what if in that moment, you looked over and, you know, some guy was, you know, sitting there, you know, typing on his phone. You know, would you have had the same experience? I was like, well, no, I guess not. And he taught me what it means to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. In every meeting that we sat in, when they would read the preamble, in the last line of the preamble, and it says, you know, our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And he would say, what's our primary purpose? And he'd say this every single day at every single meeting. He'd lean over to me and say that. And it took me forever to actually hear what it was. And finally, you know, I heard it. And then later he said that, you know, our third tradition is all well and good. And it's absolutely true. But if you want to be a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous, then the primary purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous has to be your own personal primary purpose. He says your purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And to this day, that is my purpose in life. And that's what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I learned, you know, I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I became, you know, the man that I am today in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I had an experience with this, and that's the beautiful thing about this, is that we all get to have our own unique individual experience, you know, with these steps. And my experience won't be yours, and yours won't be mine, and that's great. But we all have to have our own experience so that when that new person comes in, you know, they can find the, you know, the right person that can talk to them. But I had an experience with the steps. And it was through the steps that this ego that I had that, you know, I'm either the absolute, you know, top of the pile, or I'm just, you know, hiding it below, you know, below it. This ego, you know, began to be leveled out. It began to be reduced. It began, you know, I began to be just a person among, you know, other people. And that was a feeling that I, you know, hadn't experienced before. When I was 30 days sober, I was greeting at the meeting that I greeted at every single day. And as people were walking into the meeting, I knew everybody's name. And everybody knew me. And I felt a part of something in a way that I'd never felt a part of something before. And it was, and I knew in that moment that this was my calling. This is what I needed to do. So I had an experience, and I went through the steps. You know, and I wrote an inventory, and I got an opportunity to look at all of these old ideas, all of these ideas that had been, you know, dictating the way that I ran my life that I'd never, you know, looked at before. All of these, you know, perceptions that I had of all these, you know, grave injustices done onto me, right? And all of this just insane stuff that made absolutely no sense. You know, I got to look at it for face value. But see, of myself and by myself, I'm incapable of seeing the truth. Like, I can't tell you what's true and what's false. But that's why when I'm doing that with somebody else, you know, in front of God, then I get the opportunity to see things for what they truly are. And it was that experience that completely changed my childhood. It was that experience that completely changed the way that I related to people. You know, and I got an opportunity that as the result of all of these resentments that I had felt, you know, real or fancy, or fancied, that I got an opportunity that I got to go to these people. And then I got to admit, you know, my mistakes and my fault. And I got to, in my blame. And I got to do these things. And I got to ask, you know, what can I do to make this right? You know, is there anything that I left out? Is there anything that you'd like to say? And I got to allow other, I got to see myself as other people saw me and not how I thought they saw me for the first time. And I got to have, you know, relationships again. And I got to remove all of this wreckage that I had created in my life as the result of being an alcoholic, as the result of just being this selfish and self-centered tornado, just always trying to get mine. I got to remove some of that wreckage so that I could have honest relationships, so that I could have a relationship, you know, with family that I'd never had before. You know, growing up, my brother and I always joked that, you know, our relationship with our father was like we were his employees, that, you know, we had a very, you know, business kind of relationship, and we would have, like, you know, family meetings where you would have to, like, give reports, and, like, that's just how it was. And, but through the process, you know, so I wasn't alone in this feeling. My brother felt the same way on this one. But, you know, through the process of making amends, you know, I got to talk to my dad about God. You know, something that I had never done before. And I got to hear the motivation behind everything that he, you know, has ever, what he said is that everything that I do, you know, is all about providing for my family. And I never realized that. I just always thought that he was the guy that liked work more than he liked us. I never realized that everything that he was doing was for us. I never understood that. But through the process of amends, I got to have that honest conversation. And we got to talk about God. And that was something that I had never done, you know, before with my dad in my life. And we got to talk about what it means to be, you know, a man, what it means to stand for something. Because growing up, you know, all I ever wanted to do was to be like my father. But there was a separation between the man that I wanted to be and the way that I conducted myself. And that's the disease of alcoholism. Because for me, I made the conscious decision that I sold my soul just little by little. I compromised my values. I compromised my integrity. I compromised everything that I thought I stood for, that I ever wanted to stand for, little by little, bit by bit, for the escape and for the relief that I got from drugs and alcohol. Alcohol took nothing from me. I gave everything to it. And that happened just little by little and bit by bit. But again, through the process of amends, you know, I got to have those conversations. You know, I started sponsoring guys when I was like 3 months sober. This is just how it was when I got sober. But you wrote it. You wrote an inventory. You started sponsoring guys. That's what we did. And I, you know, started sponsoring. None of them stayed sober in the beginning because I had no idea what I was doing. But you know, I started having experience with that. I started having experience with helping other people. I started having experience. You know, some of them started staying sober. I started having an experience with seeing the light come on in somebody else's eyes. I started having the experience of seeing somebody else feel a part of Alcoholics Anonymous in the way that I got to feel a part of Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time. You know, I got to see, you know, other people's, you know, lives start coming together. I got to see, you know, one of the guys that I sponsored who'd had just like the most insane, you know, like divorce and separation and just all this stuff. And I got to see, you know, over the course of a couple of years, I got to see him, you know, now be, have, you know, primary custody of his children. And I got to see, you know, the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous in all these other people. And in seeing the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous in them, I get to see it in myself. I've had some amazing experiences as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I traveled for work for like 3 years, and I lived in 6 different states. So I got to see Alcoholics Anonymous all over the place. And every time that I'd move, I'd get a new sponsor. I'd go through the steps. I'd get plugged in with, you know, new fellowships. So I got to see all sorts of crazy AA. They do AA pretty different in some places. It's wild. But, you know, I got to see all these things. I got to become a part of fellowships, you know. I got to, you know, help start, you know, meetings, you know, and, you know, young people's conferences, you know, in all these different places, and then still be connected on Facebook with these people and see, you know, a meeting that, you know, I started with some buddies, you know, a couple years ago is still going strong, you know. And I got to be a part of, you know, of Alcoholics Anonymous in a way that I never imagined that this is what Alcoholics Anonymous would be like. But I got to do those things. You know, when I got to, I moved to Georgia about a year and a half ago. I was at a time when, you know, I hadn't been going to meetings. I didn't have a sponsor at the time. You know, I was not doing the deal. I was just obsessed with my job. I was obsessed with money. I was obsessed with what I thought success looked like. And I got so wrapped up in that. And on the outside, I had absolutely everything. You know, just bought a brand new check, had more money in my bank account than I knew what to do with. You know, number one sales guy. You know, just all of these things on the outside, right? Things look really, really good. Inside, I am just absolutely miserable. Absolutely miserable. And I don't know why that is, because I have the things, and the things that make you happy, I have the things that make me happy, why am I not happy? And I didn't know how that worked, right? I had the things. But I didn't have any connection, you know, to this power greater than myself, and I had no connection, you know, to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I gradually started, you know, working my way back into Alcoholics Anonymous, just kind of begrudgingly. This happened over like a 6-month period. And, you know, I still had a sponsor in name. Things, you know, still aren't, you know, going very well. And then ultimately I just had this, you know, this kind of, you know, like wake up moment that I need to get back to what's truly important in my life. I need to get back to that primary purpose, because that's what I had gotten away from. For me, regardless of everything else that's going on, because like just in, you know, the short time that I've been sober, like I've been very, very successful. I've, you know, I've struggled. I've been like all over the place. And when I'm most happiest, regardless of what's going on, it can be when I'm doing really, really well. It can be when I'm doing terribly. Just, you know, like performance wise, you know, as far as, you know, my career goes and all that. But if I'm in touch with that primary purpose. If I'm in touch, you know, with seeking God, with seeking sobriety, and trying to help, you know, other alcoholics to do the same, then everything else is okay. But the thing is that I can lose that if I don't stay close to this. So I got plugged in with the Fifth Tradition Group, which is the greatest meeting that has ever been in the entire world, and I am absolutely convinced of that. And I saw guys that were sober forever and just send the most foul memes ever. and you know, we cut up and we have a good time. And what'd John say? The two things that we're serious, that we're deadly serious about, is the book and staying sober, or helping other people. We'll go with that. Those are three important things. And about nothing, pretty much nothing else. You know, and I absolutely love that. You know, and I found my tribe and I got reconnected with that. And, you know, today in this moment, I mean, I'm the happiest that I've been in the longest time. And it's just the result of being plugged back into Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the result of being back in touch, you know, with what that purpose is in my life. You know, and I get the privilege of, I sponsor a whole bunch of guys right now, and I absolutely love it. And I'm reading the book with them, and we're going to meetings, and, you know, we're sitting there in a meeting, and, you know, they'll all share in the meeting, and then, you know, and it's just, it's the coolest thing, you know, and we run, you know, we run around to different meetings, and we, you know, just do this thing as a pack, you know, and I absolutely love that. And feeling a part of that, I mean, it's the most wonderful thing. I think that there's just this, you know, there's two sides to Alcoholics Anonymous, and some people just never get the opportunity of seeing that other side. And it's just the result of putting forth the actions. You know, it's just the result of showing up and saying, I need help. It's just the result of saying, showing up and saying, you know, I want that too. You know, it's been an amazing thing, you know, to be a part of. The relationships that I have in my life today, you know, I'm counted on. People can count on me to do things. They can count on me, you know, to show up. They can count on me to show up at my job. You know, my family can count on me. That was something that they'd never been able to say, you know, about me before. But it's absolutely true today. You know, I get to love other people, and I get to feel love. And for me, that's God. You know, that's when I feel God. That's something that I never knew before Alcoholics Anonymous, but that was something that Alcoholics Anonymous absolutely gave me. So with that, I'm very, very grateful to be here. Thank you for my sobriety.